Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
And we are...
Hello! To Lee Wardlaw.
Hi.
And good afternoon to you as well.
Thank you.
It's wonderful to be talking to you from Tel Aviv all the way to California.
Oh, wow. That's exciting.
Yeah. Thank you for waking up early.
Oh, no problem. I'm always up early.
And I'm incredibly honored to have you on the show. And before I forget, my name is Mel Rosenberg, and I am the host of the Children's Literature Channel of the New Books Network. And I am here with multi award-winning international writer, author, advocate, Lee Wardlaw, who has sold so many books, over a million copies,
yep,
for over 30 books.
Yes.
And we want to talk about your journey. We want to talk about your thoughts about the children's book industry, because it is an industry. And maybe we'll get some ideas going forward.
Sounds good.
So in order to go forward, let's go backwards.
Okay.
So start at the very beginning, a very good place to start.
I was born... No, I'm not going to go back that far.
You could.
I could. But actually, I've been writing since I was 7 years old. It was something that I knew... very early. You know, I wrote my first story when I was seven, and I immediately started writing poetry. I'm a cat person. My mom and my dad swear that my first word was kitty. And so the first poem I ever wrote was about a cat. Actually, it was called Mouse Revere. And it was all about Mouse Revere, who was running through the streets on his horse, calling, "The British are coming, the British are coming." So the Ballad of Mouse Revere. So anyway, cat person, and wrote my first two novels when I was in sixth grade. I was 11. They did not get published. But, you know, I've been doing it ever since. And so I knew going forward that, yes, I was going to be a writer. I studied to be an elementary school teacher, which made a lot of sense. I did that for 5 years to make some money, and also to stay close to my audience and learn about them. And then took a year off to write my first young adult novel. And I sold that in 1984, 1985. And it was actually based on my family's experiences. I live in California. We have a lot of fires here. And there was a firestorm in Santa Barbara one night that burned down 200 homes, and my family home was one of those that burned down.
Wow.
And it was really devastating. We lost everything. Even one of my cats was killed in that fire.
How old were you?
I was in college. I was a senior year in college, but my youngest brother was 14. And so I was able to... I was observing him and noticing the changes in him after we lost our home, and decided, okay, this is the first thing I'm going to do. I had written some picture books and sent those out got rejections. I made all the mistakes that you can make in the beginning when you first start writing. But I decided, okay, maybe I'll switch to young adult. Young adult novels were very, very popular in the mid 80s. And there were a lot of things called the ABC after school specials, which were on television. And they were, you know, very intense 1 hour or 2 hour stories for young adults. And so I thought maybe that was the better way to break in rather than picture books. Picture books are the hardest types of book to write. Not that YA is easy, but
now you tell me, where were you when you started 50 right. years ago? Come on.
Well, same with me. You know, I thought, well, I'm a teacher and I had taught elementary school and preschool and, you know, I should know. I read these books all the time, but no, I was not great at it in the beginning. So I wrote this young adult novel called Corey's Fire, which is about a 14-year-old girl whose home and neighborhood are destroyed. And so I worked through a lot of my own emotions that I had gone through and what my family had gone through by turning it into a novel. And it was the first book that I sold in 1985. And I never went back to teaching, although I do love students and love to speak at schools all across the country. And so that's how I've continued that, but have been writing ever since. And I've seen a lot of changes in the publishing world. You know, young adult novels were very popular, as I said, and I sold three YA novels. And then all of a sudden, nobody wanted young adult novels anymore. The baby boom took over. And suddenly, it was the second baby boom. You know, the first one was after World War II. And suddenly everybody wanted picture books. So it's like, okay, you know, maybe I need to start studying picture books again and writing those again. So boy, it was a lot easier to sell in the 80s and early 90s. I mean, they were just desperate for children's books because there were so many kids. So, you know, and then there was another dip where suddenly they wanted middle grade novels because those younger kids grew up and 8 to 12 year olds. So I started writing those novels. So and in between, I also wrote easy readers and board books and three nonfiction books, which were really fun. I really like to challenge myself and I don't want to keep writing the same thing over and over again. I really want to kind of experiment and try new things. So
okay, so we're going to talk about your haiku books in a minute.
Okay,
but usually the writers that I interview have a specific genre that they aim to,
right?
And then I try and force them to admit that if they write for 6-year-olds, they're a 6-year-old at heart. But you've written, you know, from the age of 2 to the age of 16 or whatever,
right?
So how do you do that? How do you negotiate the Lee, the toddler, the adolescent?
That's a really good question. And in some ways, I'm not sure I know. I mean, I think my voice is best for 8 to 12-year-olds or maybe 10 to 14. I have almost total recall of junior high, middle school years, 5th and 6th grade. It was a really hard time for me. My parents got divorced. That was just devastating. And my best friend moved away. And, you know, middle school is really one of the hardest times. So I can really go back in my mind and become this 12-year-old Lee. And so I think my voice for my middle grade novels, that's really where I shine. And I've written novels called 101 Ways to Bug Your Parents. It's not an instruction book. It's not nonfiction. It actually is a novel. 7th grade Weirdo. You know, so a lot of the things that I was working through when I was in middle school, feeling weird, feeling out of place, not feeling accepted, not feeling like I belonged anywhere. Universal feelings, universal themes that all kids go through. And I think maybe that's the key for writing to all ages, is that you need to think about what is the universal theme here for this age group. What are the universal feelings that children have? And that's the way you can get into that mindset.
But do you have to write to your own angst? You know, everybody's talking about own voices, you know. You shouldn't be writing about Hanukkah if you're not Jewish. There's a ton of Hanukkah books though. Can you write to someone else's angst?
I think so, but you need to do your research. The thing is, you know, I mostly write fiction, and so I think I can create a character to be whatever I want him or her to be. But do my research about the culture and the language and, you know, things that they've gone through. And I've done that. Several of my books have been talked about because they have multicultural characters. But, you know, I write from the viewpoint of a boy, best, and I'm not a boy. It's just that I had two brothers and I have a son, and I just relate really well to boys. So, you know, if someone to tell me, well, you're not a boy, you can't write from the viewpoint of a boy, it's what? Of course I can. I write from the viewpoint of cats. I'm not a cat. So yeah, I think it's absolutely fine to do that sort of thing. But yeah, do your research. Definitely do your research.
Okay, and how did you break in? In the 80s, you sold YA, young adult. Did you have an agent? Was the SCBWI pivotal in this? Tell us a little bit about how that happened.
Okay, good question. Well, originally, when I was doing picture books, I was just submitting them myself, sending them out, getting lots of rejections. And then what was really pivotal for me was the Santa Barbara Writers Conference. And this was a conference that had started in 1970. Really fabulous. It was one of the first conferences that was a week long, that there were lectures in the afternoon and in the evenings, but the mornings had workshops. And you would join, you know, a nonfiction workshop or an adult fiction or mystery. And they had a woman, Joan Oppenheimer, who was in charge of the children's literature workshop. And that was just phenomenal because not only did I learn a lot, but I was able to go in with manuscripts and have her critique and other members of the workshop critique as well. And the woman actually took a real shine to me. She really wanted to, she saw something in me and said, you know, your picture books are really fun, but your voice is young adult and I'd really like to help you. And so she became my mentor and she critiqued several times my first novel that I wrote, Corey's Fire, and suggested that I start sending it out. And I sent it out for 3 years and I'll never forget the day. This is back in the days of letters, you know, no email back then, but I got a letter in the mail and I thought it was another rejection. And I opened it up and it said, we'd like to publish your book. And I literally screamed and dropped the letter like it was on fire. And my husband came running in, you know, what? And it's like, I sold the book. I was just so excited. And so once I had that sale, I contacted my mentor and said, you know, do you know any agents? I need some help negotiating this. And she did. She introduced me to her agent, who agreed to negotiate the contract for a fee.
How wonderful of her.
I know. It was really amazing. And then,
you know what? I was going to interject. This industry is full of wonderful people. I've been so many things in my life, and I've never encountered a community of people who are so willing to reach out and help one another. It's incredible.
It really is. And that was something that I noticed immediately, how kind everybody was. And, you know, at the Santa Barbara Writers Conference, and then after I'd sold my first book, I started attending the SCBWI conferences, and everyone was just so helpful and so kind about introducing you to people or giving you advice or whatever. And so
maybe because the odds are so against us, you know. One person's success is not another person's failure.
Exactly. And there's plenty of room for everybody to come in. And
there's plenty of room for everybody to get rejected hundreds of times.
Yes, I know.
Rejected with us.
I've saved all my rejection letters. Someday I should see how many would go all around this room.
Masochists of the world. Boy.
Yeah,
we have a profession for you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know. My husband was a winemaker. He owned a winery for several years. And wow. And it's tough, you know, when you have a new wine come out, they get reviewed by the wine magazines and you can live or die by those. But he said the children's book field is even worse. You know, if you don't get reviewed, that's really bad because then nobody knows your book is out there. So, but anyway, my mentor introduced me to the agent. She was my agent for 3 years. She did sell several of my books, but she really only wanted to work with young adults, young adult novels. And I wanted to, you know, try some other things. So I ended up leaving her, and another friend introduced me to a young agent who just had started out maybe the year before. Her name is Ginger Knowlton. She's now the vice president at Curtis Brown Limited. But I was one of her first clients, and she's been my agent since 1989, 88, something like that.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. So just adore her. She's been really wonderful, patient during the years, the lean years where nothing sells, and she just keeps hanging in with me. So it's great. So that's how I got started. Is possible to get plucked from the slush pile, because I was.
Were plucked from the, but you sent a manuscript to a publishing house.
Yes. Yes. And they had it a year. And what was funny was that I wrote to them and said, hey, it's been a year, what's happening? And they said, we're rejecting your manuscript. And then a couple of weeks later, I get an acceptance. And evidently, they couldn't find the manuscript. So they just said, we've rejected it. And the reason why the reason why they couldn't find it was because the editor-in-chief had it on her desk and had decided to offer me a contract. So I have a lot
We're finding you guilty because we've lost the papers that argue your innocence. That's wonderful. So Lee, I don't want everybody to get very excited. I've had many people on the show. The statistics are that 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 5,000 manuscripts does get picked up by an agent or by a, the odds are very much against us. So we're going to talk about your thoughts going forward, advice to young authors like me. But in the meantime, you published over 30 books. Mm-hmm. What is hardest to write? Young adult, middle grade, picture book, or board book? I can ask you because you've done all of them.
Oh, I've got a good story about this. Picture books are, I think, the hardest, but board books even harder because you only have 7 double page spreads. And after my son was born, when he was about a year old, I'd been watching him learn how to take his first steps and thought this would make a great picture book. So I wrote a 500 word picture book about a baby learning how to walk for the first time. And HarperCollins bought it. They absolutely love it. And they said, but we think this would be better for babies and toddlers to read since it's about them learning how to walk. So we'd like you to take your 500 word picture book and cut 450 words out of it. And in my mind, I'm screaming, what? But you don't say no to an editor. And I said, oh, yes, I can cut 450 words out of it. I agonized for a while.
Is this true?
Yeah.
I had to cut my picture book from 550 to 350. And it was like a pound of flesh.
You
went from 500 to 50 words.
Yeah. Yeah.
My goodness. And what happened?
I did it. Because what I needed to do was kind of refocus on what was the most important parts of the story. And after I did, I actually cut out 451 words. And I love it. It is so much better. Before, it was a nice rhyme before, but it was 500 words and it was too long. It would have been much too long for babies and toddlers.
What's it called?
It's called First Steps. Let me grab it. I should First have Steps. It right.
It's like the title is already 5% of the text.
Exactly.
Wow.
First Steps. It was illustrated by Julie Pashkis, who's done some wonderful things. And it won some awards, was on some honors.
Can you show us a bit?
Sure. Creep, crawl, pull up tall, giggle, wiggle, Waggle. Full. The thing that's really fun about this book, and you know, a lot of people say they get upset when they find out that the editors choose the illustrator for you. And it's like, no, because in a picture book, it's not just the writers, it's both the illustrator and the writer. And the illustrator is not supposed to just copy what the words say and draw that. They need to bring in their own creativity and their own vision of what the story is and deepen the story, make it a better story. And what Julie did in this, nowhere do I have a cat when I was writing it, but what she did, let me move this a little bit here. What she did was, first of all, she puts a cat in the story eventually so that you see the boy, he's actually, or the toddler, he's going after the cat. He's chasing it. You think he's heading for the teddy bear and for mom, but he's actually kind of chasing the cat in the beginning. So there's one layer. But then the other thing that Julie does is up here is a window. And there's a nest with a mama bird in it and a baby bird in it. And as the baby learns how to walk, you see the little head of the birds, and the mother bird teaches the baby bird how to fly. And on the last page, when the baby is heading for the mother's arms, where books are hard to open, the baby bird is taking his first flight. Absolutely brilliant. As I get chills when I talk about that, because it just, you know, it made the book so that you could enjoy it as you're getting older and older. There were layers, you know, at first the child is just going to concentrate on the kid or the cat, but as they read it again and again, it's like, what's in this window? There's a baby bird. The mama bird is teaching the baby bird how to fly, that sort of thing. So it makes it interesting for the adult as well as for the child.
So here's the thing. So this is maybe a message that I learned the hard way over decades. When you're writing, you know, you think that the more you write, the more, you know, accolades you're going to get, the more appreciated. You say, you know, I'm the author of this picture book.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, you have to throw the ball up in the air for the illustrator. And yes. You have to renege on at least half of the credit.
Mm-hmm.
In order to get the full credit, you have to renege on half of the credit.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's fine. I mean, in the beginning, I was a little bit worried, but, you know, I think visually as a writer, which is different from thinking visually as an illustrator. And I'm not sure I can explain why, but, you know, I would have a vision of what my book would be, but not really. And so to have someone else bring it to life, it's just magic to see.
But you have to let go.
You have to let go. And
the other book that, because you have this, it's really ridiculous to say I have a way with words, but the other book that this reminds me of that you've written is Red, White, and Boom.
Yes.
And you have this, like, it's such a playfulness. It's not only rhyme. It's not only meter. It's also having fun with words, like, chewing them. I don't know how a better word, you know, like you're
absolutely
you're chewing the bubble gum while you're reading your prose. It's wonderful. It's prose.
Well, and poetry. How I do that is when I read my work aloud all the time. And I tell people that all the time. You know, you can't just read it silently in your head, especially picture books, because picture books are poetry. Even if it's not in rhyme, they're so lyrical. And each word packs a punch. Each word is so important because there are so few of them. So you have to have the strongest, the most vivid, the most image inducing words that you possibly can. So it is, and poetry is meant to be read aloud. And so I read all, even middle grade novels. I mean, I will read an entire chapter locked in my office, read it aloud and listen to the words and see if I stumble anywhere. And if I do, then I know I need to go back through and smooth that line out. So it's really an audio type of thing as well as just reading.
So I want to now fast forward because you've talked about the industry and the difficulties and the challenges You've even talked about starting a small publishing house of your own. Or am I reminding you of something that you've forgotten?
I've talked about that. I've been looking at the facts and figures and not sure that that will happen, but I am starting an award, an award for a book.
Tell us about that.
Okay. Well, I am a cat person, have been for a long time, and not too crazy. I don't have 14 of them, but we do have two, Bumblebee and Coconut. They were our COVID cats, because our beloved cat we'd had for almost 20 years passed away during COVID. So we got two new kittens to make us feel better. But anyway, I've been a member of the Cat Writers Association for 27 or 28 years. And they have a contest every year where they award, a beautiful medallion to all the best books and articles and blogs and that sort of thing written about cats. And they have a category for children's literature.
All right. They have a category.
Yes.
sorry.
I haven't heard that one before.
Bad milk, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, they have an entry fee. And so typically the only people who enter are members of the Cat Writers Association. And in the beginning, the entry fee was only $8, but it's now up to $30. So I think there are a lot of traditionally published authors who don't want to have to fork out $30. It's expensive. We don't make that much money. And so we get very few entries in the children's category. So I finally decided, well, I'm going to start my own award. I have co-sponsored it with Pause to Read Month. There is a holiday called Pause to Read Month. And
one second. Pause to Read? Pause?
E-A-W-S.
Pause to Read. Pause to Read.
Yeah, Pause to Read, but also P-A-U-S-E. And the point of that is a lot of children have a hard time reading aloud. And so to practice their reading, they read to dogs or they read to cats, therapy dogs, or they go to shelters and read to cats. And dogs and cats are non-judgmental. They aren't saying, hey, you missed a word there, or, you know, read that over again and you've mispronounced that. So it's a wonderful way for children to become better readers. So anyway, I'm co-sponsoring with them an award called the Perfect, P-U-R-R, Perfect Page Turner Award. And it's for the most outstanding children's book that is cat themed. The main character doesn't have to be a cat, but cats have to be integral to the story. And 2023 will be the first award. It'll be awarded in November. And so books that were published in 2022 are eligible. There will be a $1,000 cash prize split between the author and the illustrator. If there's no illustrator, then $1,000 goes to the author completely. And you'll also get a plaque and some award seals for the front of your book. And I'm really excited that I'm doing this because there are some fabulous books, children's books, that are published every year, and novels too for children that are cat themed. So there you go. The word is out.
Wow. And this is for books that are traditionally published, independently published. What?
Yes. Either one. Self-published, traditionally published, as long as it's cat-centric.
So can you put a link here after the show and we'll share it?
Yes, I will. And actually, if you go to Facebook, I'm just setting up a website right now, but if you go to Facebook and go to the Perfect Page Turner Award page, you'll find it.
That's wonderful.
Thank you.
So there's so few people who do wonderful things like that. I don't have a cat book coming out, but I'm certainly going to take Pause.
Well, I may do a dog award eventually. So maybe in 2024. So we'll see. Because with Pause to Read, you read to both dogs and cats, but I decided to start with cats.
So and you've been a little critical of the current state of affairs in children's publishing. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, it's hard to make a living in this business.
It is.
If you call it a business.
It is. Yeah.
Why is
half
that?
My income along the way has always been school visits, speaking engagements, you know, speaking at conferences. And
even though you've sold over a million copies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, I'm still considered a mid-list author. I haven't had, you know, that one breakout book. My probably the book that's won the most awards is my first haiku book, Wonton, A Cattail Told in Haiku. And everybody reviewed this. It's funny because it was my 27th or 28th published book. But people kept saying, oh, my goodness, you're an overnight success. It's your first
book. You're the ideal interviewee.
Why?
You segue into the questions I haven't asked yet.
Oh. It's because I talk too much. I just keep going.
Listen, it's your program. I talk too much, too, so I listen.
Oh, okay.
And tell us about this marvelous book. Because it's definitely not a run-of-the-cat book.
It is not, definitely not. And how I got the idea for it was I took a poetry class because I wanted to become a better picture book writer. And I've always written poetry, but never really thought of myself as a poet. So I took a poetry class taught by a really fun children's book author who did several picture books, Ellen Kelly, and she also does marvelous poetry. And we had an assignment to write some haiku. And I've been writing haiku since third grade because it's taught in third grade a lot because of learning syllables. And I had written quite a few and I thought, I had decided that I was going to write a picture book about my son and a cat that we had adopted and, you know, what their relationship was like because we had gone to a shelter and adopted the cat and the cat was very scared the first few days, hid under the bed, took him a while to coax him out, but eventually they became very good friends. And thought, well, there's already, you know, I did my research. There's already a lot of books out there about a boy or a girl who wants a pet. So I really shouldn't write it from the boy's point of view. And I thought, well, maybe I should write it from the cat's point of view. And thought about rhyme, but thought, no, that's going to be too cutesy. And so what I really needed to do was create a character so that I would know what the voice was going to be like. So I decided that the cat was going to be older, not a kitten anymore, a little bit older. He spent most of his life in a shelter. He's maybe two. And he's got some catitude. And then I thought, okay, he has to write in haiku because cats and haiku have so much in common. They say very little, or they say a lot in you know, just a few words. They're both elegant, they're beautiful, they're about nature. And so I wrote the entire book in haiku and got 10 rejections. I thought, this is my 27th book. You know, I'm submitting to editors, my agent's submitting to editors who've published my work before. And everybody said, no, the haiku, we don't like the haiku. It creates this distance between the reader and the main character, which I didn't agree with. And my agent at one point said, do you want to rewrite this book and rewrite it in prose? And I said, no, absolutely not. Keep going. And the 11th publisher she sent it to, the editor got the manuscript on a Friday and bought it on Monday. It's the fastest I've ever sold a book. But when it came out, I got 3-starred reviews, one from Kirkus, which is almost unheard of. Kirkus had not been too kind to me in the past. They don't like my funny books. They don't think I'm funny.
You're funny. Can you read a few of the haiku?
Oh, sure.
Gorgeous book.
Yes, thank you. Well, illustrated by the fabulously talented Eugene Yelchin, who has actually not only illustrated a lot of books, but very famous now. Breaking Stalin's Nose is a fabulous middle grade novel in which it was a Newbery Honor book. So this is Wonton, and I'll read just a few. So it starts in the shelter. Nice place they got here. Bed, bowl, blankie. Just like home, or so I've been told. Gypsy on my left, pumpkin my right. Together, we are all alone. Visiting hours. Yeah, I pretend not to care, yet I sneak a peek. Let's see, maybe I'll just skip ahead. One thing you need to know is that this book is actually in senryu, which is a type of haiku, where it's usually written from the viewpoint of a character. And it's usually humorous, maybe a little bit snarky. Ah, he finally gets visiting hours. I dub her Pinchy. He's ow, tail yanker. You boy, rub my chin just right. No resh, I've got plans. Gnaw this paw, nip that flea, and wish, please boy, pick me. Latch squeaks, door swings wide, free, free at last. Yet one claw snags, clings to what's known. And the last one I'll read. The car ride. Let me out, let me out, let me out, let me out. Wait, let me back in. That refrain is carried through the book and kids love it. They love the repetition. They love getting to read along with let me out or let me in. And I spend half my life or used to letting my cats in and out. Now they're indoor cats only. We have too many mountain lions and coyotes in our neighborhood.
Here in Israel, we have feral cats. While I'm talking to you, and I see my backyard cat.
Oh.
Yeah. So he'll come a little bit later. I had other questions, but this is like really bothering me. Why did people reject this book? And I have like a premise. Sometimes, you write a text. And the editor, even with his or her experience, doesn't imagine in their mind what the book is going to look like.
Yes.
And with the haiku, it's more. I feel it's exaggerated. So I want to ask you a silly question. You know, when we submit, we just have the text. like mashed potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
When you submitted this, did you submit it in some fancy way, or was it just like the way we submit? Because I think that this, and then you need the 11th editor to see beyond the mashed potatoes setting, the typeset.
Right.
And say, wow.
Yeah. I wrote it, I centered all the poems and I did divide them into sections, the shelter, visiting hours. So it was kind of like little chapters, but it's just,
letters on a page. Book.
Right.
You need to see the book.
And I didn't even know what it was going to look like. And so I think that's important. This is a good point that you brought up, because you may get depressed at those rejections, but it's good that you were rejected by those editors, because if they have no vision for what the book is going to look like, and if they're not absolutely enamored with the story, then they're not going to be the person you need to be. And my editor, Sally Doherty at Henry Holt Books for Young Readers, she knew. She just immediately knew. She didn't have an illustrator in mind yet, but she thought, this is going to go somewhere. But I think it was rejected too, because no one had ever done a book before with where the story was told in haiku, and publishers are there to make money. They need money so that they can buy more books. And so they want to stick with something that's worked before.
Yeah, but they want something new that's been done already.
Right, exactly. So
they write, surprise me, but they don't really mean it.
Right. Oh, yeah. I've asked my editors, what are you looking for? Oh, just I'll know when I see it. Write me something new.
Right.
And
this book is so beautiful. First of all, the cat is an empathy magnet from the first page.
Yes.
And it works on so many levels, because on the one hand, it's, how do you say that? Anthropomorphic.
Yeah, that's it.
But then it isn't. In other words, you've got it such that, like, I feel for the cat as if he were a child in a foster home or in a adoption. But hey, this is a cat. And that's remarkable. So hats off on so many levels for this, and also the
Thank you.
The poetry. Wow.
So well, getting into his head was really important. And one of the things that I did, I ended up with probably 60 poems when I finished the first drafts and narrowed it down to about 30. And I took out anything that sounded authory or human, really. I wanted him to stay as real as possible. I mean, at one point he barfs up a fur ball into a shoe. I mean, that's what cats do. And they're not, they may look really cute, but they're not cutesy. They're, you know, very elegant, wonderful, poetic creatures, cats are, I think. So, you know, maintaining or being true to who your character is what makes it work. And the Wall Street Journal reviewed this book and gave it, you know, a wonderful review. And the Washington Post, it was one of their best books of the year. And I think it's because even if you're not a cat person, I've had dog people comment to me, I hate cats, but I love the story. I love this cat. So there you go.
It's brilliant. So Lee, advice to young or old and aspiring authors. We've had this discussion. The market is difficult. Everybody feels hard done by. Minorities say, finally, we want to have books that reflect our background and our culture, and that's wonderful. And people like me say, what about books from Jews? And what about the guys? You know, I don't think there's anti-Semitism in this business. But there sure is anti-maleism.
Yeah. Funny though, interrupt just briefly. It's funny because the schools love to hire male children's book authors and illustrators to come in because it's dominated by women. And when they get a guy to come in, it's like, this is fabulous. What a great role model for everybody in the audience to see.
I was told 7 years ago, use a woman's name. You'll never break in. Not because you're Jewish.
Not because
you're old, but because you're a guy. This is a woman's industry. And actually, I submitted a couple of manuscripts with a woman's name, but it didn't work because I had to change my email. I had to change my bio. That was crazy. But I just tell you a funny story in this regard. So I just got a review for my new book. And it was such a nice review. People thought we were related. So I phoned up this guy. And I said, thank you very much for reviewing my book so nicely. And he said, what, you're a guy? He said, I was sure you're a woman. I didn't say anything. I felt really good. I said, okay, I must have been using my feminine side to write this.
That's right.
But going back, everybody feels hard done by. It's so hard to break in.
It's a hard business, no matter who you are. And it may be harder for some people at one period of time and harder for others at another period of time.
How do you keep going? How do you increase your chances from 1 in 1,000 to 1 in 100? It never gets better than 1 in 100. How do you?
Yeah, I've been through this so many times. you know,
if you don't know, nobody knows, Lee.
Because, it goes like this. Well, you know, I think you can't rest on your laurels. And if you're just starting out, there are no laurels, but you keep writing. You just write and you have to think, you can't think about your audience. You can't think about editors. You can't think about, I mean, I write to entertain myself. And sometimes I don't know who my readers are going to be. I mean, I may have a general idea of, okay, I'm going to write this for, you know, fifth grade through eighth grade, but mainly I'm telling my story, but in a way that works. And I keep taking classes. I'm always taking classes on how to become a better writer and reading books. I have so many writing books that, you know, I go back to over and over again, and I talk to other writers and I go to conferences, and I love it when I, you know, when I'm finished with my workshop or my presentation, I can go hear other authors. I mean, you have to be constantly learning and constantly writing to keep up. And there have been a few times where I've thought about, okay, maybe I'm done. Maybe my career is over and I should just stop. But But I keep writing. And so it's like, well, okay, I wrote this. Maybe I'll have my agent send it out, you know. So I'm just going to keep going. And you really have to have a lot of stamina and perseverance in this industry to keep up. If you're going to cry after a few rejections and give up, then yeah, you're never going to get published that way. Your manuscripts that are sitting in the drawer are never going to sell.
Someday somebody will interview me. So just for the record, I was rejected hundreds of times.
Wow.
And I just had a picture book come out in Israel.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. So the miracles happen, but they are miracles.
Mm-hmm.
And they happen sometimes when you least expect it, from the places you least expect them to happen from. Is there anything else that I've forgotten? Because we're towards the end of this wonderful interview that I've waited for 2 years.
Oh, I know. I feel so bad with California storms and mothers going into the hospital. Well, one thing I want to talk about is just briefly is that I'm trying something very different right now. I'm writing a type of book I've never done before. It's a book of poetry, a collection of poems set during the American Civil War. And there will be poems from soldiers, Confederates, Yankees, and poems written by members of the U.S. colored troops, which is what they were called at the time. Inanimate objects are going to be speaking, but I'm writing voices that haven't been heard before from the Civil War. And I've always been fascinated by the Civil War because it was a brother against brother, a sister against sister, and it really united the United States after we finally abolished slavery, and fighting to end it was so important. So it's taken me a while to do it because poetry is hard for me, but I'm putting this together and I love it. And I don't know if it will ever get published, but I really hope it does. So I'm about halfway finished with it. So I'm going to keep going, but it's what kept me going during COVID was, you know, researching that. I tend to fall down a lot of rabbit holes because I love researching and I love history, but hopefully you can look forward to seeing that book someday. We'll see.
And then we shall have another interview.
That would be fabulous.
I think I'll book you now for 2 years from now.
Okay.
We'll make sure that there's no fires. Everybody's in good health.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I hope so.
This has been marvelous. So before I forget, I'm Mel Rosenberg, and I am the... Oh, I keep forgetting what I am. I'm the host of the Children's Literature Channel of the... I should write this down. Of the New Books Network.
Little script.
And I've been talking to the wonderful, really, Lee, thank you so much, Lee Wardlaw, who woke up early in the West Coast of America, multi-award-winning author of over 30 books, million copies sold. And thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your career. It was wonderful.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I really enjoyed it very much.
The pleasure, as they say, was all mine. And now I have an idea for a story about a cat. I want to win that prize.
Okay. I look forward to your entry.
Need to find an agent and a publisher, though.
There you go. Hey, easy.
Maybe the 2028 submission. Lee, it's been great. Take care, dear.
Thank you very much. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.